The Book Club at 91.7, WVXU and WMUB. I'm Mark Purcell. On the phone with me is Marta McDowell, the author of the new book, All the President's Gardens, Madison's Cabbages to Kennedy's Roses, How the White House Grounds Have Grown with America. A fascinating look at the evolution of the White House Gardens. Marta, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Thank you, Mark.
Let's go back to the beginning, because when the White House was first built, George Washington, well known for his landscape at Mount Vernon, had plans for this seat for the U.S. president. Talk about the original plans for the White House and its gardens back in Washington's day.
So when Washington laid out the Federal City with the help of Peter L'Enfant, he was following a plan that was fairly French in inspiration. Obviously, L'Enfant was a Frenchman. But Washington wanted the house sited not exactly on axis, so not right in the line that you might expect it, but actually up on a little hill. So very similar to Mount Vernon in style, kind of overlooking the river and overlooking the grounds. The grounds of the president's house were really extensive, so much bigger than they are today. Today they're 18 acres. And it was really a very kind of axial design, lots of long diagonals and right angles.
Now, while Washington did have some input into the gardens, the house was still being built even after he left office and took some years to really be complete. But it was Thomas Jefferson, who we've always, you know, heard about, and his planning and his forward thinking when it came to so many things. But I noticed in the book that the oldest existing design for the presidential gardens and grounds was actually attributed to Thomas Jefferson, and that wasn't until 1804.
That's right. So Jefferson didn't do much planting himself, which surprised me because he was such a gardener at Monticello. But he was busy kind of finishing up various building projects around the Federal City. But he did do a plan that is much more English in style. It has kind of winding pathways and the park-like settings you might expect. And then he basically hands it off, who was a friend, and Madison is the first one to start putting in plant orders and actually getting plants into the ground.
And he and his wife Dolly were quite the party makers, and Dolly found it very important to have those flowers surrounding the White House.
Yes, she was quite the hostess, and, you know, personally, I think more involved in the interior and certainly in fashion than in the grounds themselves. And at the time, landscape gardening was really considered more of a gentleman's occupation than a lady's. But James Madison got nursery orders and seed orders, planted a lot of things, lots of vegetables, which surprised me. But at the time, you know, the presidents were kind of supplying a lot of their own food for the table. And things that you and I might plant ourselves, you know, lilacs and Rose of Sharon and lots of trees and things like that.
I love some of the pictures in your book, Marta. Some of the paintings and drawings are just amazing, and tracing the White House grounds and the White House itself through the years. And I loved one early picture of the White House and its grounds in 1831, and there's sheep grazing on the south lawn, and that was the form of lawnmower back in the day.
Yes, it was a cheap form of mowing and fertilizing, Mark, so you got you got double benefits.
I'm speaking with Marta McDowell, the author of All the President's Gardens, Madison's Cabbages to Kennedy's Roses, How the White House Grounds Have Grown with America. Details about the book on our website, wvxu.org. And I loved the gardener John Owsley, and I loved reading about how, with produce grown on the White House grounds, he won many prizes at local fairs.
Yes, I don't know how exactly that worked, that he got to enter these in these horticultural fairs, but he clearly did. He was an Irish immigrant. He stayed at the White House for a really long time. Once he made his way to Washington, D.C., he stayed for over 20 years. And it was interesting because while I was researching, I was like sort of pushing my way through Ancestry to see how much I could find out about these 13 men who had been head gardeners at the White House since 1800. And one of his, you know, relatives I got in touch with, and she sent me a picture of a little silver trophy that he had won at one of the cultural fairs.
Wow. Well, you mentioned James Madison was the first one to really take the gardening seriously, but who do you feel was the president who really moved the White House grounds forward and to what we see today? I mean, who really began that trend for making the White House grounds a real botanical paradise?
Oh, the one with the biggest impact had to be Teddy Roosevelt, because when he moved in, right, he suddenly became president because William McKinley was assassinated. So Teddy moves in with his family. It was a big family, and the White House was very crowded because the president was expected to work in the same quarters where the family lived. And at the time, stuck on the west side of the house were a series of conservatories and glass houses, so like a botanical garden, and a lot of production greenhouses. And Roosevelt decided, nope, I need more space. So off came all of those glass houses, and on comes the predecessor to the West Wing, and he and his wife Edith plant a colonial revival garden out back. Again, quite formal, but a lot of old-fashioned flowers. And they loved that garden. You know, he writes about his children, and, you know, the First Lady had her portrait painted there. It was really their special place.
It's a shame that those conservatories went by the wayside when after Theodore Roosevelt moved in. Some of the pictures you have from the 1850s, I believe, show these huge, huge glass structures attached to the White House. I mean, they're as wide as the White House is, the main body of the White House is in itself. And this was quite an extensive complex of conservatories and greenhouses. It had to be beautiful.
And it really surprised me, Mark. Like, when I first saw images, I only saw things like etchings or paintings, and I thought, oh, they must be exaggerating the size of these. But then I saw photographs, and, you know, they were not exaggerating. These were really extensive. And, you know, I guess by Roosevelt's time, by TR's time, they had kind of gone a little bit out of style. And he needed the space, so off they went.
It's, as you mentioned in the title, just to see how the White House grounds have grown with America, and so many parallels with what's happening in society. You were talking about Washington and Jefferson and looking at the English influences and then the colonial revival from the Roosevelts, and really that's how these gardens, they have not stayed static through the years. They have really changed dramatically.
Now, not at all. I think we can sort of think of the White House as this fashion funnel where you have lots of influences going on in the popular culture, but they have a way of bubbling up and showing themselves at the White House. I'm sure it's true in interior decorating as well, but I was interested in the garden history, and it's amazing how many different styles pop up. I mean, you get Italianate during the Woodrow Wilson era, and then you get, you know, Kennedy kind of going back to colonial revival almost with the Rose Garden.
Quite a trip through the gardens at the White House. In the book, All the President's Gardens, Madison's Cabbages to Kennedy's Roses, How the White House Grounds Have Grown with America. I'm speaking with author Martha McDowell about the book. You can learn more at WVXU.org. And I have to say, I enjoyed the section talking about Nellie Taft and how Nellie brought cherry trees. I mean, the presidents and the first ladies have really had a huge influence on gardening in America, as well as the landscape around them. And I was fascinated to read your account of how Helen Taft brought the cherry trees to Washington, D.C., and that they started attracting visitors from the very beginning.
One kind of takes things like the cherry blossom festivals for granted, right? It's just something that happens in the spring, and isn't that nice? But, you know, Helen Taft in the Philippines, you know, her husband was the governor of the Philippines for a period, and she loved the public park there. And so when she got to Washington, a couple of people were already starting to talk about maybe cherry trees. And she got this idea that Potomac Park, which is this one that, you know, is visible if you look out from upstairs at the White House, that it could be turned into something like Luneta Park, where people would come and stroll, or you could take your drive, and wouldn't it be wonderful if it were full of flowering cherry trees? And so that is what she really engineered, is getting a big donation of cherry trees from Japan and planting them, and they were a great success with one little bump in the road. The first batch that came from Japan was quite infested with insects and had to be burned, so oops.
That was quite sad when I read that account in the book, too. And you know, we feel, as we look at the White House grounds, that they've pretty much stayed the same, that there's, you know, a lot of legacy there, but you talk about how some of the more recent presidents have had to deal with what are basically old gardens. They have had to be regenerated just because of the age and the trees beginning to overshadow the roses in the rose garden, or you know, that cycle of life in a garden that you don't think about until you're in a place for 200 plus years.
Right. So, you know, if you hang a painting on the wall, generally, it stays there, and it doesn't get bigger. It's not true in the garden. So while the rose garden that we know today was installed for John F. Kennedy, it's actually been entirely replanted once. I can't quite remember. I think it was during one of the Bush administrations, just because the roses got so much shade, they couldn't bloom anymore.
Well, I also love the accounts of battling with the pests. You know, you figure, oh, it's the White House. They shouldn't have any problems there. And I love your accounts of battling all the pests, especially the squirrels. The squirrels have been a nemesis for gardeners at the White House for some time, haven't they?
Oh, they have. They have indeed. So, you know, squirrels love tulips. They love tulip bulbs in particular. So the gardeners would do things like put out a bushel of Georgia peanuts to lure the squirrels away from the tulips. They went through one project of trapping and transporting the squirrels because they were interfering with President Eisenhower's putting green. So, but of course, Ronald Reagan loved the squirrels. He would feed them outside the Oval Office with acorns. So.
Well, I love the account and loved meeting all the gardeners who have been involved through the years. As you researched your book, All the President's Gardens, what is your favorite story that you uncovered while you were writing, Marta?
Well, kind of a sad story in a way, but a personal favorite is the story of John Watt. John Watt was the gardener during the Lincoln administration. And Mary Todd Lincoln had something of a buying problem. She loved to buy clothes. She also was buying a lot of furnishings for the inside of the White House, which had gotten a little run down. So she was buying carpeting and things. And she quickly ran out of money. And Mr. Watt offered to help her by padding the garden budget, you know, making it look as though he'd bought more soil and plants, and then, you know, helping her pay off her creditors. And some congressmen got wind of this, and they called it the manure fund. And that was shut down. Mr. Watt got fired. And so sad for him. And I guess sad for Mary Todd Lincoln as well. But I found the stories of the gardeners really compelling. So compelling that I actually had to put their stories in the back of the book because it was starting to take me away from the, you know, the sort of through storyline of the history. So
it's a wonderful book, and as I said, the wonderful pictures and illustrations and maps, quite a lot to learn about the White House grounds. But thank you.
Ew.
Marta McDowell. Her book is All the President's Gardens, Madison's Cabbages to Kennedy's Roses, How the White House Grounds Have Grown with America. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. And yes, indeed, in the back, she has a biography for all 13 of the first gardeners who have served at the White House, as well as a list of all the plants and cultivars that have been used on the White House grounds. It's a great resource. Check it out again at wvxu.org. This is the Book Club at 91.7.